Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events here in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, together here with
Pat Schlarbaum.
Mr. Pat Schlarbaum. Thank you for listening in. As you can imagine, things have changed a lot here at KHOI in the last few days, as it has everywhere else. The station is pretty empty, and we're keeping it that way, but we do have a skeleton crew here of people, and we have decided to keep the station open because this is a time when we can provide vital information as well as support to the community and entertainment as well for those of you who are beginning to discover cabin fever. So stay with us. We will stay with you as long as we can and keep providing information and services to this, our community in Central Iowa. We do have a lot of information for you. We don't want to spend the whole time talking about the coronavirus. Life goes on in other areas. Cal Halliburton, our candidate reporter, has an interview that he'd like to share with us with Teresa Greenfield. Teresa is a Democratic Party candidate for the U.S. Senate, so we will be bringing that to you. But before we do that, we do have some basic information we'd like to share with you. Pat, you have information about food in the area.
Starting today, March 18th, Hy-Vee stores will close at 8 p.m. until further notice. Hy-Vee's new store hours will be 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. These shortened hours will allow employees additional time to clean and sanitize all areas of the store, as well as restock the items in highest demand. Operating with shorter hours also will allow employees additional time to care for the families and their loved ones. The dining areas, all dining areas in all Hy-Vee stores, restaurants, and convenience stores are now closed to the public. Food service areas will still operate during the normal hours, offering freshly prepared meal options for carry out only. Also, all bars inside Hy-Vee Market Grill locations have been closed until further notice. For Hy-Vee Isles Online customers, deliveries will now be made by third-party partners like Shipt and DoorDash, where available, in order to help in-store employees focus on pickup orders and other needs at the stores. Hy-Vee Isle Online customers may find that their preferred delivery or pickup time isn't available at the moment due to increased demand. There's a lot of adaptations going on, as you can imagine. During this very unusual time, Hy-Vee is asking customers who are able to do so to shop in stores so that the available Hy-Vee Isles Online time slots can be used for those who are unable to shop for themselves or have been advised by healthcare professionals to limit their public exposure. A quote from their CEO, "This is an unprecedented situation for all of us. We've never dealt with anything like this before, and we know our customers haven't either. We appreciate their patience and loyalty as we navigate these changing times. We are committed to doing all we can to keep our customers and employees healthy and safe, and to being the helpful smile in every aisle that is needed during this time." Randy Ediker, Hy-Vee's chairman and CEO and president. So along these lines, I did read of new store hours for the Fairway stores. The hours that are going to be restricted or dedicated to the elders of our community and those with sensitive immune systems to shop will be 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. So they will be opening at 7, but actually just the public will be welcome from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. as their new store hours. And let it be known that Fairway employees and management are doing everything they can to address and adapt to these changing times. But the principal hours of note are 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. for elders and those with compromised immune systems.
Wheatsfield has closed down their salad bar, but they are still serving food in the area where they used to serve
in
the salad bar.
And things,
yeah, they have containers now, so you still can buy food at Wheatsfield.
For carry out.
For carry out. We just did that yesterday.
Yeah, it was great cabbage soup. It was as delightful as ever, but we just had to bring
container.
It back to the station. Yeah.
Right, yeah, you can no longer eat at Wheat's Field. Mm-hmm. That's right. And the store is still open. Okay, and from McFarland Clinic, of course, the clinic is playing a central role. Some of the resources there is a nurse phone line, a McFarland COVID-19 nurse phone, and that is 515-500-6711. Again, that's the nurse phone line, and that's 515-500-6711. And we'll put these on our website as well. And they say, if you have symptoms such as cough, fever, or shortness of breath, and believe you may have been exposed to coronavirus, please call McFarland COVID-19 nurse phone line. Again, that's 515-500-6711. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and a nurse will ask you a series of questions and direct your care appropriately. So the answer to the question is, if I feel that I have the symptoms, what should I do? Yes, you should call McFarland Clinic. It would be good to call ahead of time because obviously they need to talk it through with you, and they also have to make proper arrangements to have you tested safely. One of the things that infectious disease doctor told me recently is it's a really good idea to get a thermometer for your temperature, because the first thing the nurse will probably ask you when you call is, what is your temperature? So invest in a thermometer, or if you have one in your kitchen, your bathroom cabinet, take it out, get it ready for use, so that when you call the McFarland Clinic, if you call the McFarland Clinic, you will know what your temperature is. There is also a resource page at McFarlandClinic.com/coronavirus. Again, that's relatively simple, McFarlandClinic.com/coronavirus. And this website gives the latest updates and information regarding what McFarland is doing and answers frequently asked questions. And there's actually an informational video there from their infectious disease physician, Dr. Dan Fulton. They mention four frequently asked questions, so I'll read those here and answer that in their answer. Question number one: when should I seek medical care if I'm concerned that you have the virus? If you have symptoms, cough, fever, shortness of breath, and believe you have been exposed, call the clinic. Can I get tested for COVID-19? What are the requirements? There are defined testing criteria, and supplies are limited, so McFarland Clinic is following Centers for Disease Control criteria, COVID-19, meaning that only patients with a known exposure and who have symptoms of cough, fever, or shortness of breath will be tested. So if you think you've been exposed, if you suspect you've been exposed, but you have not had symptoms, you are not eligible for a test. And many among us, of course, feel that way because none of us really know who's exposed and who isn't. So they're saying wait until you get the symptoms.
Yeah.
Question number three: my employer is requiring a doctor's note saying that I don't have COVID-19, so I could return to work. How can I get one? McFarland Clinic will only test patients meeting CDC criteria. So the CD is advising employers do not require healthcare providers to issue notes for employees who are sick with acute respiratory illness to validate their illness or return to work. Mm-hmm. McFarland is following the guidelines of the CDC. And finally, is it safe to come to the clinic? Should I cancel my routine appointments? And their answer is, McFarland Clinic providers and staff follow standard infection control procedures to protect patients and staff and to control infection. Notice signs at all clinic entrances direct patients with exposure and symptoms to call COVID-19 nurse phone line instead of coming to the clinic. So don't go to the clinic without having called first. And if you have concern about your scheduled appointment, contact your healthcare team or call McFarland Clinic. There is a link that's called My Chart, which I think is where you can access your own medical information, and that's a link that we can provide on khoifm.org if you don't know that link. So those are kind of the basics. This is obviously a question we're all having to ask ourselves. If and when do I get tested? And these are McFarland Clinic's answers.
And along those lines, Ursula, my understanding that the test kits need to be kind of prioritized for those in the healthcare provider status. So it's, unfortunately, I think it's all about the test kits right now. So taking care of yourself is kind of preeminent right now. So the thermometer and mm-hmm. kind of monitoring your own health care. I'm sure we'll all learn about adaptations on trust and.
Yeah, and we're all learning together as we go along.
Willingness to be patient.
We don't want to. Spent all of our time providing information, but we do feel there's a lot of information that needs to be provided. I know I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you listening to this do. So we will continue to bring you information as we can and updates from various parts of the community. Susan Franson's going to be joining us a little bit later.
Oh, great.
With some updates from the county. And but, Pat, before we go to this interview with Teresa Greenfield, I just want to talk a brief moment. I can't resist talking about the wild ones just for a few minutes.
No.
What are the monkey screams I'm hearing in the trees at night?
Oh, the monkey screams? Guys.
night, there's all sorts of monkey screams in the trees.
Quite likely owls, barred owls, and great horned owls. But even the raccoons, I think, are they mating? Could they
I think it's too early for them.
Kind of, but without hearing the screams, but loud calling in the night.
Yeah.
Generally, this time of year has a lot to do with the owls.
The owls. It's not very dignified. Usually they sound so dignified.
Well,
this is definitely not dignified.
Yeah. Well, it's somewhat unnerving.
It's hard to imagine
times.
That's romantic. But.
Yeah. Well,
to each his own.
Yeah.
And I hear that the Decora eagles have 3 eggs.
Yes. Things are moving along quite nicely. And I think they're realizing, my good friends there, Amy Reese and John Howe, have both commented how the opportunity for people who are somewhat isolated to check in with their Decora eagles is every bit as powerful as Bob Anderson's quote when he started all this 10 years ago or so, 11 years, that it gave people a reason to get up in the morning. So
yeah.
I might just suggest that the Decora Eagle Cam is running and things are working out as we had hoped. So
life goes on with the eagles.
Life goes on with the Decora eagles.
So they're easy to find. Google Decora eagles.
Oh, yeah, Decora eagles or a Raptor Resource Project, RRP.
Okay. We're going to check in with the political world here for a minute, take our minds off of the coronavirus. And just as a reminder that life does go on and we do have elections such as they are. And Cal Halliburton, our candidate interviewer, has been busy at work. He spoke with Teresa Greenfield, who is with she's with the Democratic Party. She's one of the candidates for the U.S. Senate. So let's check in with Cal and Teresa.
Yeah. It's our pleasure today to be talking with Ms. Teresa Greenfield. Ms. Greenfield is seeking the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the United States Senate for Iowa. Ms. Greenfield grew up on a farm near Briceland, Minnesota, just across the border from Iowa. Her father ran a crop dusting business in addition to farming and used the bank and grain elevator in Rake, Iowa. Briceland is less than 25 miles from Lake Mills in an area that's often referred to as Lapland, where Iowa and Minnesota overlap. Her first husband, a journeyman lineman and member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, was killed in a job when she was 24 with a one-year-old son and pregnant with another. Social Security, workers' comp, the union, and her family helped her transition to a college degree and take care of her family. She and her second husband have 4 grown children together. They live in Des Moines, where she's now president of a family-owned real estate company. Teresa, tell our listeners something about yourself they'll not find on your website or with a search engine.
I'll get to that. That'll be good.
Okay.
You know, I think it's just really important, though, that your listeners understand why I'm running for Senate. And then I'll let them in on a little trivia. Yeah. Well, I'm a businesswoman. Worked my entire career in small businesses. I'm a mother of 4. I'm a farm kid. And I'm a product of the farm crisis, so I'm kind of a scrappy farm girl. And I'll tell you, I just think that Iowans have been left behind by our current senator. So many issues that Iowans care about, whether it's health care. For me, Social Security, you talked about that quite a bit, and certainly our farm economy drive me to stand up and run. And today we're kicking off our Here in the Heartland tour. We've already attended about 90 public events around the state, and now we're really going to be moving around the state, taking the opportunity to meet with folks like you, but also just everyday Iowans to hear what it is they'd like their next senator to do.
Well, we're happy to have you here today.
That's great.
As you talk with people, as you move around the state, what are their most frequent concerns?
You know, I'll tell you, the most frequent concern is health care. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a high cost. Their premiums, their deductibles, their out-of-pocket expenses, their prescriptions. But there's also concerns about their viability of their hospitals, labor and delivery units. Folks like my folks, you know, very typical, could be anybody in Iowa worried if their hospital closes, and they already drive 20 miles for their hospital, their groceries, and their faith community, that they might have to drive 60. And people just can't afford it. So it is the number one issue I hear about.
The health care. Keeping the hospitals open is extremely important. Grocery stores are something else that people are concerned about losing in small communities around Iowa.
That's right. It's a difficult thing. And so we do have to think about these small communities, and they've become, a lot of them, sort of grocery deserts. And like mm-hmm. I mentioned, my folks and so many folks I know drive 20, 30, 40 miles for groceries. But there's some innovative conversations going on out there with some folks that want to rebuild some of these food networks. And it's happening at the farmer level. It's happening at the community level. And I think that we can help grow some of that for them.
One direction you might like to go would be in rural development. What kinds of things would you want to do there?
Sure. Rural development is definitely on top of my list. Given an opportunity to be on the Ag Committee, I wouldn't say no to that. That'd be fantastic. But I will tell you, Social Security is also really important to me. As you mentioned, my first husband died on the job, and the kids and I would probably have gone to poverty without Social Security. And Senator Ernst and Mitch McConnell have talked about privatizing Social Security and cutting Medicare, and those tax breaks that were given to large corporations threaten Social Security and Medicare. And it's another reason that drives me to stand up and run and say, no way. This is a hand up for people in a time of crisis like myself, or seniors who've paid in, and now it's time to get back. And real leaders would work to sustain Social Security for generations to come. And when you can live anywhere, rural or urban, and know that your Social Security is secure, that's going to help those communities.
How do you secure Social Security for the long-term future? Do you raise the cap? Do you eliminate the cap? Those are certainly a couple of things. Now, I know folks on the other side of the aisle might be saying, oh, well, no, you reduce benefits. You extend the year that it takes to retire. What direction would you go there?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to continue to listen and ask Iowans what they want to do. And I do hear a lot of ideas out there. Raising the cap is absolutely one of the top ideas that folks mention to me, whether it stays where it's at and bumps up to a much higher income level, whether it just is removed. I've had people say just remove that cap. I think that we can come together with the right leaders in Washington to create that kind of legislation to sustain Social Security. What we have right now, though, are leaders who want to cut it, who don't value it, And I think that we have to make sure Iowans understand there's a different choice out there and someone that will value their Social Security and work as a leader to sustain it.
Well, I've got a whole list of issues that we could cover here. Look at that, half a page.
But I have to put my glasses on to really see
that. That's okay. I'll read a few of them. In order to get some of the things done that we need to do in this country, we don't currently have sufficient income on the government side of things in order to accomplish them. So we need to raise taxes somewhere or another. How might you approach raising taxes in order to have enough financial wherewithal to do many of the things that need to be done for rural development, for maintaining our infrastructure, et cetera, so many things that need to be accomplished?
You know, your neighbors and my neighbors around the state talk about getting big money out of politics and the outsized influence of special interests and how that has affected legislation and really affects Senator Ernst's inability to really put Iowa first. And so whether that issue is health care, whether that issue is taxes, and remember she voted for a tax bill that has given huge breaks to corporations that pay zero in taxes, and you and I and my neighbors around Iowa aren't paying zero in taxes. That affects our ability to do so many of the things on this list that you and I want to talk about. So first and foremost, we have got to get big money out of politics. And I want your listeners to know that I have taken a pledge not to accept any corporate PAC donations. And Citizens United has endorsed our campaign. look, I've worked in small business all my life. I value business. But we also have to have the voice of everyday Iowans at the table.
So how do you get big money out of politics?
Well, first, I want everybody to know that they can make a difference with their $25 donation to all of their candidates. It does make a difference, and to have that hope. But there are some great examples of what next steps we could do. If you got the opportunity to meet Governor Steve Bullock when he was in the state this fall, they had some wonderful success in Montana with bringing some transparency to dark money groups that got involved in elections. So I think there are lots of things we can do if we elect people that want to limit the role of dark money groups in our elections, bring that transparency and that fairness back to our governing process.
Yes, one of the things that I recall Bullock indicating that they did in Montana was to at least expose who was donating what. And that helps reduce the effect of that amount of money and also helps keep some of the people away because they don't want to be exposed.
That's right. For just your average person who donates to a campaign, for example, you know, your name will go on the list in the FEC report, and we all know where our neighbors are investing, and that's fine, and that's the way it should be. But dark money groups should have to comply with the same kind of standard. We should know where these dollars come from and who's investing in our public good.
Do you have any position on those things?
Thank you for asking. I believe we are long past time where we need some sensible policies to keep guns out of the hands of individuals that can hurt themselves or hurt others. And I'll tell you, I grew up rural. My husband and I are responsible gun owners, and we used guns on the farm to, one, fill that freezer in the fall, and that's still an important part of our family's lifestyle. We used it to protect our livestock. You know, varmints were a bad thing. They reduced our income. And third, you know, I loved Sunday afternoons when my dad would throw skeet. I think I liked it best because I was better than my brothers at it. Yeah. And so sensible policies that responsible gun owners endorse overwhelmingly around this country and certainly within Iowa to help save lives and help reduce gun violence.
One of the things that folks, kind of a barrier that folks put up is, okay, you want to spend all this money on doing a whole bunch of really good things that sound really good anyway, and what are we going to do then about the national budget and the national debt?
Well, certainly my experience has been running small businesses and balancing my checkbook there and at home. Absolutely, those are serious concerns. We have to remember that Senator Ernst, when she ran, she told us she was going to be independent, different, and make them squeal. And, of course, we've seen that our debt has increased by about $2 trillion since she's been on watch, and I think our deficit is set to increase by about $1 trillion. And so what I think people need to remember is we're going to have to work on this together, and we need to elect different leaders who are going to pay attention to those dollars and prioritize those dollars in a way that puts Iowans first.
Well, one of the issues that we haven't covered that's at the top of my list, in fact, is water quality. Is there anything you can do at the federal level to deal with that?
Again, what you're pointing out is Iowans value their natural resources. They value clean water. They value their waterways, not only for drinking, but for sport and relaxation. They value the hiking, the camping, the picnicking. That's certainly how I grew up, and others that you know have done that. And I think in Iowa here, we've had some tension between some of the uses around our waterways. We've also heightened the conversation here in Iowa. And I think a few years ago, Iowans passed an amendment that wanted some of their tax dollars to go to clean water. I think that's a great place to start. Mm-hmm. And then we can begin to look at ways to reduce those nutrients that are in soil, in the water, and get back to working towards cleaner waters throughout our state. But we have to make that investment.
One of the things that a number of folks in the rural communities around make note of is that they can't find employees right now. There's no one to work for them if they have a small business. And that brings us to immigration and what we do about new people in the country. Mm-hmm. I'm an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came here in order to find work. And there are other people clamoring to get into the United States mm-hmm. to work and work mm-hmm. hard.
Yeah.
You have a position on that?
Yeah, this is something I hear about, whether it's through folks who are running businesses and want to grow and want to expand and can't find workers, whether it's community leaders who want more neighbors and more small businesses within their communities. There's definitely a talk in a positive way in Iowa about immigration, and we've had some wonderful experiences here. We've had leaders like Bob Rae, Governor mm-hmm. Bob Rae, who showed us the way to welcome new Iowans. And we yes. need to take back our leadership roles and get back to that kind of welcoming of new Iowans. But I will tell you, even the business communities and some of our faith communities and nonprofits have come together, and there's a group called, I think it's called the Iowa Immigration Compact, and they're talking about, you know, just common sense ways to move forward and modernize our immigration system that benefits families, keeps them together, grows businesses, allows opportunities, and provides people a map so they can invest in our communities and grow here. I'd like to continue to do that.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listening audience about you and why you're doing this?
Well, absolutely. You know, I think your listening audience needs to know I'm definitely not just a feisty farm girl. You know, I have a lot of passion and compassion mm-hmm. When it comes to my leadership. And I have spent over about 14 years in my life as a community planner, spending 3-4 nights a week with neighborhood groups, planning commissions, city council. I really highly value public service. Mm-hmm. And I think part of being a public servant is representing the public good, you know, being willing to do what's right, but also not looking away from what's wrong. And in Washington, things are broken, and we have too many leaders, in particular Senator Ernst, who looks away from what's wrong. And I want your listeners to know that I bring that experience to the table and will continue to do what's right and value the public good first over any personal good.
Thank you very much for being with us today, and I'm sure our listening audience will appreciate hearing from you. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. My first radio interview.
Well, wonderful. It's
Thank
great
you.
For us to be a first.
All right. That's right. I look forward to coming back.
Be delighted to have you.
Awesome.
Fuerte como el fuego. ayúdame a estar presente. Medicina, ayúdame a estar presente aquí y ahora en todo lo que hago. Aquí y ahora en todo lo que amo. No ayer, no mañana estoy aquí. No ayer, no mañana estoy aquí.
You've been listening to Danique Troybeck, a delightful South American-influenced musical fare. Wasn't that delightful? Well, I am Pat Schlarbaum with co-host Ursula Rundberg. We are KHOY, the heart of Iowa. And Susan Frangin, who is the host of Local Talk Wednesday, has joined us with news from the county.
Yes, this has been quite a surprising week. We were expecting to have Leanne Harder, who's our usual once-a-month guest with the Story County Report. She comes over, but today everything is thrown off because of the sudden awareness of COVID-19, which has closed schools, disrupted long-awaited sporting events, and even created problems getting food. So Leanne's report consists mostly of closings of county departments. I didn't even know there were so many county departments. But I know that the county department at this time of year that will interest a lot of people is where they pay their property taxes. And that's the Story County Treasurer's Office. No more standing in line on March 31st to pay your taxes. The Story County Treasurer's Office will close to the public today, Wednesday, March 18th, at noon, until further notice. During COVID-19 concerns, the office will continue to process and support property tax payments. They're not letting you off the hook just because they have to close, and motor vehicle transactions. But customers will be required to conduct their transactions through the mail, online at iowatreasurers.org, or by using our drop box in the southeast corner of the Story County Administration Building parking lot at 900 6th Street. In Nevada, to go to storycountyiowa.gov to avoid paying a penalty, but I advise you get these details accurately. The Treasurer's Office will continue to update the public on any new information that develops. Anyone with questions can call the Treasurer's Office, 515-382-7333. And especially if you don't have access to a computer, I'll repeat that number, 515-382-7330. That's a lot to keep track of. People without access to a computer will really have a hard time getting information about anything from where to get food to what's open. But it would be easier to make a list of facilities that aren't closed, basically everything. The closure applies to all county buildings and facilities except the Justice Center in Nevada. That's the new one out close to Highway 30. And the Human Services Center in Ames, which will remain open. However, the Community Services and Veterans Affairs offices will be closed to public access. All county services will remain operational and available to the public either online or via phone or email. Offices and departments are making every effort to ensure minimal disruption to public services during this time. Story County remains open to provide services, but access to our buildings and facilities will be limited. Story County offices and departments will be open to all to serve. And if you go to storycountyiowa.gov, you'll get a daily COVID-19 update. I have more notices from the Ames School District, but I see that my time is close to being up, so I will limit what I'm going to say to grab-and-go meals. They don't start until the end of spring break on March 23rd. The schools will be able to provide grab-and-go meals at Meeker and Sawyer Elementary Schools because the Iowa Department of Education has received approval from the USDA to provide our summer food service program meals. We will be able to serve any students under 18 years of age. Both Meeker and Sawyer Elementary have been approved as serving locations, and we've asked for reconsideration in all, and also allowing Mitchell Elementary to be included. We hope to receive an answer regarding Mitchell soon. Our other school sites do not qualify under this program, but any student in any building may access meals from the other sites. Meals will be provided to all children without charge and provided on a first-come, first-served basis. We are developing further details and we share specific times when those are determined.
So, Susan, I think you also mentioned to me in another conversation that food pantries are not closing as of yet in the area.
No. Some have closed.
Some have closed.
Because this, United Way is organizing that.
Okay. So we'll get a report on that by in the next few days.
Yes. And I don't have time to talk about the really wonderful work that United Way is doing in coordinating the distribution of food. United Way is us. You know, many people give to their work. This is actually a program that exists all the time, Story County Hunger Collaboration, that makes sure that the food pantries are stocked and keeps track of which ones are open, which is a big job right now. In this crisis, some food pantries have closed. Many of the volunteers are retired people who are in the vulnerable age to contract the COVID-19. So they are following the health guidelines and voluntarily isolating themselves. I wasn't able to learn whether Food at First will be able to stay open, but I did learn that the Salvation Army has meals. Whenever I called, I found people working to find solutions for meeting the basic needs of our citizens. It's one of the things I love about living here in Central Iowa. There are a lot of people who have practical skills as well as the concern to face this crisis and any others that we may have. So I'm glad to be able to really tip my hat to those wonderful organizations, and you'll be hearing more from them as well as from the Emergency Residence Project, which worries about the people who have no housing.
So, yes, Susan, that's just an excellent point. At this time where funding needs to be reallocated to the people in most in need, and that's right here locally. And I think if neighbors and friends start banding together, we will be learning new adaptations as we go along. So today and tomorrow and
we'll
Friday.
Report them as we learn them here at KHOI.
Yeah, and that's kind of our role to strengthen this effort through our communication outreach. So
heart to heart.
Yeah, keep those good reports flowing.
I have a few other resources that were listed by the League of Women Voters. Walgreens is offering free delivery of all prescription drugs during this crisis. Their phone number is 232-8284. That's 232-8284. Hy-Vee Clinic Pharmacy is offering free delivery of prescriptions in Ames for those who can't get out due to health concerns. And their number is 233-7315. Again, that's 233-7315. And CVS offers free 1 to 4 day delivery on orders that are $35 and up. Target has online shopping with options for a free drive-up curbside delivery to your car so you don't have to go into the store. They say that their frozen food items are limited. The local store number is 663-9500, 515-663-9500. There is a link to drive-up shopping But I think that's if you go to Target, it's a hot link, so it's not worth reading on the air. But if you go to the Target website, you'll find it. Hy-Vee also has online shopping with two options: home delivery for $9.95 for orders over $30, or pickup at store for orders over $30. Fairway does not offer any delivery service. The Ames Public Library does have books and movies that can be downloaded or streamed. So go to the Ames Public Library website to find those. And pet supplies from Ames Treats on a Leash here on Main Street, they offer free delivery on orders of $10 or more. And their number is 515-233-4592. And there are other links that are important for you to have. There's the Center for Disease Control, Iowa Department of Public Health, McFarland Clinic. And again, I want to repeat the number. The crucial number is the COVID-19 nurse line, which is 515-500-6711. That's the number you want to call if you want to make an appointment for a test. And, of course, there's Mary Greeley in the City of Ames. These are all links that we'll put on our website at khoifm.org if you're looking for them. As just one more place to look for information and any questions that you have as we in real time try to figure out what to tell you and how to tell you in time enough that it's useful for you. Pat, you have been having ongoing conversations about coronavirus with Carolyn Raffensperger.
Yes.
I'd like to play one of those really lovely segments you've made. Would you like to say a word about it before we play it?
Well, yes. Carolyn is a resident here in Ames and just a wonderful personality. That's also the director of the Science and Health Network. And her thoughts are, and as an attorney, she kind of sees a big picture. So I kind of sought her out, and she has a lot to share. So,
okay.
Yeah, let's have that, please. Okay, Carolyn?
I'm here.
Oh, my gosh. This is amazing. It's working.
It is working.
Yes, with Carolyn Raffensperger. What organization do you represent?
I work for the Science and Environmental Health Network.
Let's talk a bit about coronavirus. This is a rapidly evolving story.
Well, I wanted to talk about what health is. And there are some wonderful people who have written about this and talked about it. One is Wendell Berry. Wendell Berry is a writer from Kentucky who is one of our great national treasures. He's written wisely and well about rural America and agriculture. And he wrote an essay where he said that health is membership. And when I look at what that means, it means membership, of course, in the human community, but it especially means membership in the natural world, that our health is reciprocal. It is this given flow, give and take between the natural world and ourselves. So when we think about what our health really is, it's belonging to this community. My health is your health. If you have a disease, if you have the coronavirus, you are likely to share it with me. On the other hand, if we tend and nurture health, we are more likely to both be healthy. Another definition of health comes from Aldo Leopold, who said health for the land is the capacity for self-renewal. And that, too, is a deeply ecological idea. It has to do with the sense of maintaining enough resilience and health to recover from disturbances like a virus. Mm-hmm. And when I put those two together, I'm reminded that I actually coined the term a long time ago, and there's a book written about it, and you can go find it. And the concept is called ecological medicine. And the basic idea is that our health is, you know, part of the reciprocity with the health of the natural world. And our health, we forget, is dependent on the pollinators, on the the oxygen that plants give us and the ocean give us. And to the extent that we destroy or damage those, we are destroying our own capacity for health. And as the basis of the idea of ecological medicine, I worked on this other concept called the precautionary principle, which is that you take action to prevent harm. And harm is a short word for what we really understand as suffering, that we can prevent suffering by taking action when we have enough, we know enough to act. And the thing that we know about the coronavirus is that we did not take those kinds of precautionary actions. Mm-hmm. We have so severely degraded the natural world and our relationships with those other beings that we set up the conditions for a pandemic.
And it seems as if life is unfolding almost as if we're viewing a PBS frontline in real time as this saga seems to be unfolding. But ecological medicine seems to be the thought that you're taking us as a measure to deal with this uncertainty.
It is. If we think of the wild world as our reservoir of health, if the bats are healthy and the bats are doing well, we're going to do a lot better. If we are not pushing some of the creatures over the brink, we're less likely to get any of the zoonotic diseases, the diseases that jump from other species to humans. And so I've been looking at what can we actually do when we're in this semi-lockdown. You know, we're not supposed to touch each other. We're not supposed to meet in large groups. What can we still do?
Right.
And the thought is that we can still go for walks. We can still be out in the woods. We can still enjoy and express our gratitude to the natural world. Last Saturday, I attended a meeting of the Friends of the Munn Woods, and we are besieged with garlic mustard, which is going to, you know, take down a whole lot of the diversity.
Now, that's a non-native plant that's essentially infesting one of our more premier woodlands, the Munn Woods, here in the city of Ames.
Yes, yes. And so we're planning in April to have work days that people can harvest wild mustard. But what's really interesting is that wild mustard is a delicious green. There are so many things that you can do with garlic mustard. So when you come out to help restore the Munn Woods in April on a Saturday afternoon, you can take those greens home with you and you can make a pesto or a pasta. Or you can put them in a frittata. There's so many things you can do with it, and that's the kind of reciprocity that we're giving to the woods. We are then using the gifts of the natural world to nourish and tend our own bodies. But being out in those woods is something that we can safely do right now, given this virus. We can't safely go to the movie theater and sit crowded together, but mm-hmm. we can safely enjoy and tend those woods as they tend us.
And I think it was Sigurd Olson to interject another prominent name of ecological stature that would encourage us to go out in nature and discover a listening post. Are you familiar with that, Carolyn?
I'm not, but what a wonderful idea.
Well, it's part of this, you know, when you don't know what to do and you're kind of, and you might be feeling a bit stuck and a little bit put upon that this coronavirus has seemed to invaded every waking moment, that it might be wise to take some of this concern or some of this activity to nature, and open up and listen to what needs to be done. So your voice with this the ecological medicines, I think has a lot of resonance here. It's a lot of good thinking. Where else would you like to go with your thoughts?
The basis of ecological medicine is reciprocity. Mm-hmm. That as we give to the natural world, you know, it gives back to us. We've been taking so much that you know, it's going to come back to bite us. Mm-hmm. And what I'm reminded of is the concept of a culture that is morally mature. And a morally mature culture is one that has a good etiquette of how we treat each other as humans, that we tend and treat each other well so that we can all thrive. And the other is that we have an etiquette with the natural world. Now, every culture has had to tailor its life and its behavior to its place. And the Apache, the White Mountain Apache, have this wonderful concept called wisdom sits in places, that it's the place, it's the home where we learn to mold our behavior to the landscape and to the other creatures that live there. And the stories that arise out of that place, our home in Iowa, the Tallgrass Prairie, and the savannas and woodlands and all of these rivers and wetlands have different requirements for a moral maturity, how we behave, how we live here. Right now, we are going to be called upon to be that wise, morally mature culture that tailors our behavior so that we tend and care for each other as humans, and we tend and care for the natural world so that we, in turn, will be cared for. I don't think that we've had much moral maturity or maturity at all as a culture. We're young, we're brash, we're often rude, we have not been well-behaved. I think if the other creatures were going to tell the story of the coronavirus, whether it would be the bats, who are on my mind because they have been targeted as possibly the source of the coronavirus. But if they told the story, what would they tell about our history of living in Iowa for the last 100 years? So I'm interested in that listening post. What would the bats say about this moment? Mm-hmm. What would the rivers say? Now, William Stafford wrote this beautiful poem that has this litany in it. What the river says, I say. And what I want now is for my own voice to be the voice of that natural world and calling for health for the whole of us, all of us. And the root word of health is also related to the word holy. And so to be the voice of the rivers, I have a little creek in the Munn Woods right behind my house. And what I want to say is, what that river says, I say.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Your voice for the environment is appreciated. And I hope we can carry this conversation further, because unfortunately this story has legs, if you will. I hope you're available to help us through this these trials and tribulations of the coronavirus. Carolyn,
yes.
Raffensperger.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else?
I think that's it.
That's it for today?
Except go out and enjoy the sun. The sun is a natural disinfectant. Hang your clothes out on the line rather than put them in the dryer, and go and say thank you. Thank you. Thank you to the natural world, to that listening post. Yeah. Say thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you, Carolyn. And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in central Iowa. We have been your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg and Pat Schlarbaum and Susan Franson.
And Susan Franson.
Yeah.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. Other music you heard was Presencia by Danit Treubeg. from her CD, Aliento.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop, as well as a show.
You can be a reporter for KHOI without coming in here. If you are at home and have time on your hands, there is lots you can do by telephone and help us get news and information out.
Well, that's a really good point. Yeah. We're all trying to adapt. So if you have a moment and some ability to outreach to KHOI's mission of strengthening our community through communication, the door is open and welcoming.
The telephone is open and welcoming.
The telephone is open and welcoming.
Yeah, we do this by phone right now. Yeah. So if you enjoyed the show, do tell your friends.
It's all about the phone.
It's all about the phone, yes. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as the listener and your generous contributions are what keep KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.